Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guests today on Keeping the Faith are two folks who for the last year have provided leadership for the Cohen Center for Jewish Life here at the University of Illinois, the Hillel Foundation. Welcome. We're talking with Jessica Cavanaugh, who is the program director, and with Rafe Melhado, who was the executive director for the last year. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
And some of our regular listeners will remember that about 11 months ago, I guess, after they'd only been on the job a few weeks, we interviewed them about what their hopes were for this position. They're both local folks. Jessica is from originally, South Africa, but she came to Decatur. At what age was that your folks moved to Decatur, Illinois?
We moved to Decatur when I was 10.
When you were 10. And then you came to the University of Illinois as an undergraduate and studied religion.
Yes.
Rafe also grew up in this town. Were you born here, Rafe?
Sure was, in Mercy Hospital.
Aha. I was born in Carl.
All right.
Your parents have been active in this community. Your father's been a professor at the university. Your mother was had a number of different careers, but for many years was head of the Jewish Foundation locally.
The Jewish Federation.
Jewish Federation. And you had been, Rafe, the director of operations at the University of Chicago, Hillel, for about 3 years before last year. So you knew about Hillel's that way, as well as both of you actually met at the Hillel Center here on this campus when you were undergraduates.
That's correct.
So we learned all that about a year ago when we interviewed these two, but I thought it'd be interesting to have them back now that they've finished one school year here. And they're now going to be going to New York City to, Rafe, you're going to be in rabbinic school to learn to be a rabbi. And Jessica, you're going to be at New York University studying nonprofit management and what else was it?
And Jewish studies.
And Jewish studies. Okay.
Yes.
So you've had this year where you were actually in New York looking for an apartment when the local Hillel folks called you to this interesting position. What was the year like?
Well, it was a little bit of a trial by fire, but it was fun. I think overall, we weren't sure how to live as adults in Champaign-Urbana. That's not something we'd ever done before. You know, meaning that I'd grown up here. I was a high school student here. Then I was a college student here. Jessica was a college student here. And then we were coming back to town after a hiatus of several years as professionals with full-time jobs working in the community. And I think we were interested to see how we would integrate back into the old locale in a new way. And I will say that the job was very consuming of our personal time. And so there was an extent to which we really had a limited social life as a result of the need to work on the Sabbath. And actually, Hillel's lovely. They have a prayer group that meets on Saturday mornings, which we're a part of. But that also means that we pray where we work. And so there was sometimes we'd be 6 or 7 days a week. We would be at Hillel for something. And so it was demanding in that way. But I also think that, I mean, I learned so much, and I think the biggest lesson, I always say this whenever I have the opportunity, is that as much as I feel that I and Jessica were able to do a number of things through our initiative and everything, it's really a collaborative effort. And there are so many people on the staff and on the board and with student leadership and just students who aren't on the student leadership board but that are just great and they help. I mean, everything that we've been able to do together, I feel like our positions have been about learning about what the goal is and coordinating the efforts of other people and helping them do Hillel, and that we're the people behind the scenes making that possible. And I think having seen it from the back, that was one of the more profound lessons that we learned, is that it's not about who's at the top. It's about how they help other people achieve the work of Hillel.
Now, Jessica, when you were an undergraduate here at the University of Illinois, you were on the student leadership board of Hillel. Now, as program director for the last year, you've worked with the students who are on that board now. What was the difference?
Well, I mean, there were a couple of differences, and some of them were sort of structural. It was a slightly different structure of the student leadership itself than when I had been president. They had changed it maybe 2 years ago and were sort of experimenting with some new, a new structure. And it was – so there was that sort of – that difference immediately obvious. Like we're dealing with slightly different positions and slightly different focus. But also, coming into it as the professional and dealing with, sort of – understanding profoundly that they're students first, and that I have to be cognizant of that when, maybe something doesn't get done or sure. I'm all those things, and that it's also about teaching. It's about guiding and helping, and not about when I was president, it was about me being in front, and this was about letting them be in front.
Sure.
And I'm behind the scenes and I'm helping and I'm a part of it, and maybe, maybe I'm behind the scenes as the glue, but at the same time, they're in front. It's their ideas, it's their initiative, as much as we could to get these things done. And even with things that, are things that we always do, what are the things that our current student leadership can, say, well, why don't we do it this way this time?
Sure.
Why don't we try this
experiment?
And those were often the times where we got the best response from other students.
Oh.
And even there was one thing we tried that we had tried when I was a student and it didn't work or not as well as we wanted. And this time it really it took off well.
So what was that?
It was actually our barn dance. When we had done it when I was a student. It had, it had some success and people enjoyed it. But I think this year it was really, it seemed like something special, and people really, really felt, there was a good sense of ownership among the leadership, and it was good for Hillel and it was good for the people who went. And I think it was overall very successful. And I think, that was, we had tried that and we had done it and it had been fun, but I don't think it was nearly as successful as it was this year.
Yeah, this year we had a lot of new faces, and that's one of the real goals is as much as there are people who self-elect to have their life have some Jewish spin to it, there are a lot of people who it's not really something that would occur to them, and that part of what we're doing is making ourselves available if they want.
Sure.
To take advantage of that resource. And I think a barn dance is a very there are low barriers to entry.
Sure.
With something like that, and it's fun, and there are people you know, and then you say, hey, I had a great time, and I was there, and I saw my friend Joe, and yeah. Now I'm going to go do something Jewish with Joe.
It sounds like both of you have the philosophy of leadership development that you put students in situations where they have freedom to think, to imagine, and to try things. And in the process of being leaders, they learn how to be leaders. But that often means there can be failures or things that aren't quite as good as you hoped. How did you prepare them or work with them when that happened?
A lot of that is about being on, sort of not being on top, but being sort of aware of everything that's going on, so that you're not just sort of like saying, okay, we're going to do this, and you're just going to take care of all of these 10 things, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. Things happen. There's a paper, there's a test, your roommate breaks up with her boyfriend. 10 things can happen in those 2 weeks that could prevent. Prevent those things from happening, and it's also not about me giving them assignments and waiting for them to finish. It's sort of, let's work together, let's keep checking in, let's make sure, and also helping manage expectations. Like, are we going for Oscar-worthy, perfect performances? are we you know, making sure that people are learning? And are we, you know, going, like, are we involving lots of other students? You know, this is your initiative, but you're getting all of your friends involved, you know, and that means delegating. And how, what's your plan for if, you know, your friend who you asked to do X doesn't come through? Like, are you going to, you know, are you also, as the student leader, keeping tabs on that? And, you know, and that gives everybody sort of more of a sense of ownership. And so you're less likely, I think, to get some of the, you know, some of the more sort of spectacular screw ups. But, you know, I think, you know, it's, we're also, we're pretty laid back and we're pretty, you know, we're everybody who's coming in understands where we're coming from. So it's not about, oh, this is like perfection. This is about we're here as students and we're here as advisors and we're here as, you know, everybody's doing it together. And it's not, you know, so if things don't go absolutely perfectly, well, like, you know, there are 10 ways to do it. So, you know, we'll pick one and go with it.
Yeah, I think
let me give the phone numbers for listeners who might like to ask a question or make a comment. We're talking with Rafe Melhado and Jessica Cavanaugh, a couple who, in addition to being married to each other, took on the responsibility of providing leadership and support for leadership development at the Hillel Foundation, the Center for Jewish Life here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, this last year on an interim basis where they filled in at the last minute. And now they're heading back to New York City, and we'll learn more about that in a minute or two. But if listeners have a comment or a question, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. We'll put you in touch with Kyle Kroa, our engineer, and she'll put you in line to be on the air with our guests. If you're listening and it's long distance, punch in 1-800-222-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, or long distance, 1-800-222-WILL. When you first started a year ago with this, I remember we talked a little bit about what your hopes were and what some of your worries were. Did you have things that you really felt, gosh, I could have done that better? Or now that I've seen how that worked, next time I will.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that was hard for me was that I think this is true in every nonprofit, so I'm not singling out Hillel by any means. But the expectations on any of the staff are very high, and people tend to, especially in the nonprofit world, what you're doing is very important. You know, maybe with like a capital I, so to speak.
Sure.
And so not fulfilling a deadline or a goal tends to mean that you might alienate someone or you might hurt someone's feelings.
Sure.
Or you might – there was a possibility for growth that could have happened and it wasn't taken advantage of. And so you really want everything to succeed. But, you know, there are only so many hours in the day. And so, you know, I think that if I had to do it again – I would look for two things to happen. One is for myself. I would look for a better way to communicate with people what was going on with me, so that if I wasn't able to live up to what someone's expectations were of me, that I would have communicated with them better about why that was and let them know more in advance the possibility that that might occur. But the other thing is that I would have had a more open conversation with some of the decision makers on the board that would say something like, you know, you're expecting me to do 15 things, and I think I can only do 10 things.
Sure.
So maybe we could eliminate 5 things, or we
what
could
are your
say,
priorities?
Yeah, or we could say, I'm going to do 15 things, but not all of them are going to be done really well, you know, and that maybe the quality would go down if the number of things can't go down. I would have felt more comfortable having that conversation based on the experience that I had this year.
We had a caller waiting, but we've seemed to have lost them. I'll encourage that person to call back. We'll try again. we are eager to have callers join this conversation. What about you, Jessica? Anything as you look back on the last year that were kind of growth opportunities for you?
I mean, I think the whole year was a growth opportunity. I mean, I think, you know, coming in, we had, you know, a lot of challenges. We were coming in, as you mentioned, last minute, and we were also in the process of hiring a new staff member. I'm not sure if we had hired that person and the last time we were here, but we were in the process of doing that. So, you know, there was sort of integrating not only ourselves, but also somebody who arrived only a couple, you know, it was like 6 or 8 weeks after us, you know, and also sort of the realization at a certain point that even with all of us there, we were, you know, we'd been sort of, you know, there was a lot fewer staff than there had been in several years previous. Right. And that was sort of, you know, to realize that we're trying to provide the same level of service
in a brand new building.
And in a brand, you know, and with a lot of brand new people, you know, that's, you know, I think if I had realized that earlier, I might have approached things a little bit differently. Oh. Like, you know, how are we going to do this without, you know, without as many people?
And as Rafe was mentioning earlier, in any nonprofit, there are huge pressures. You know, you're trying to deal with boards and people and students in this case, but particularly in a religious organization, you're also dealing with people's spiritual lives, and so you really feel extra pressure because, boy, a mistake made maybe in something social, well, they'll get over that. But if it's something that affects how they think of themselves as a Jewish person, that can really be long-lasting.
Yeah, there's a great blog, which depending on people's prior level of knowledge, it will be more or less accessible, but it's called Ma Rabu, M-A-H-R-A-B-U, and it's by a guy who founded an independent prayer group that's called Kol Zimra, the Voice of Song. And it's a pluralistic group, meaning that they accept, welcome, and fully integrate members of many different denominations into their prayer services.
Within Judaism.
Yes, exactly.
Orthodox, conservative, Reformed, whatever.
Exactly. And they've really struggled with what does pluralism mean. And that's something that, I mean, Hillel is a pluralistic organization, and we reach out to Jews of all denominations, including Jews that don't align themselves with the denomination. And, you know, a lot of the struggles that Kol Zimra has had to deal with resonated with me as a Hillel director. And I found out about this blog from my previous director in Chicago, Dan Liebenson. But one of the things that it points out that I thought was beautiful is that your goal is actually not to make everyone comfortable. If you try to make everyone comfortable in a pluralistic society or in a pluralistic group, you're going to fail because people's needs are just so very different that what makes one person comfortable, you know, is going to make someone else very uncomfortable. But really what the goal should be is to try to make everyone feel like they belong fully and that their own personal needs religiously aren't going to be violated by what is happening, meaning that something that could happen in the community could make them very uncomfortable, which is it's a potential turnoff, but you haven't made them do anything that they didn't want to do. And that's usually what has caused them to be uncomfortable is not doing that for its own sake, but it's about allowing everyone who's there to do what they need to do in a way that isn't going to interfere. And I think that refining that and explaining that to people, like there were a few people that came and said something that you did or did not do caused me to be very upset and turned off. And usually I would try to get them to say why and then talk about you know, do you feel that we screwed up and we should change, or do you feel that I'm going to suggest that you think about it in a different way and maybe the things that I've said will show you that you were uncomfortable but you weren't violated? And that's something that I found very helpful.
Now, you two have a pluralistic marriage in that, in some sense. At least I remember a year ago you talked about your background Rafe being Orthodox, and you and Decatur, Jessica, grew up in a Reformed temple,
yes.
Synagogue. Is that what I remember?
Yes.
How has this last year changed any of that, if at all?
I think the beauty of Hillel is that there's a lot of opportunity to observe in different ways. You're in a building where there's four Passover Seders going on at once, and you can pick and choose and decide what it is that you want to how do you want to observe on that particular day.
So you can start with the Reformed, and then you could later join the Orthodox, which would be going on 2 extra hours.
Exactly. I mean, if you really want that is totally an option. I think as a Hillel student, when I was here, that was amazing, and I think. Yeah. The difficulty as staff was that those four Passover Seders were going on, and I was helping out in the kitchen, making sure that we're all set up for each Seder. But I think, in a way, that was also—I mean, I know that was also meaningful for me. It was basically Rafe and myself and the kosher supervisor, the mashgiach, in the kitchen, sort of. Going through the Seder together as a group of three. And that was really, that was sort of an intimate experience in the midst of total chaos. and that, that was an important experience for me. I think the only thing is that I don't know that it has helped me. Do I identify more or less with any denomination? Well, I mean, I've been working in sort of like, well, now we're going to talk about this Reform thing, and over here we're going to be, these guys are doing something for the Orthodox. And, so I don't know that that's sort of any clearer for me. But I have had some really interesting and unusual
opportunities
that I think have helped me grow as personally, even while, most of what I'm doing is helping other people with their journey.
Now, you mentioned the chaos that happens when you're having four different Seder services in one building, even if it's a building designed to try to be welcoming to all. Tell us how many students are involved when you've got the High Holy Days at Hillel. How many Jewish students are there on campus? How many are active in Hillel?
So we have the numbers that we have are about 3,000 Jewish students on campus. It's approximately 10%, and we're looking at about a third of those who come through or have any kind of contact with Hillel or Hillel staff or those sort of things through a school year.
Okay.
So that's we're talking
a lot
like,
of students.
It's a lot of students. I mean, some of them clearly they'll be the students who we see every day.
Sure.
And then there's the students we see once.
Yeah.
And those are clearly two very different experiences. High Holidays, we have three services going on. So there's hundreds of students in the building. Same Passover, same thing. We're having all these Seder, so hundreds of students in the building, in and out. That's one. One kind of experience, and I think, but then you also have the more intimate things where people come for classes and they come for, craft projects and they come for smaller group, prayer and those kinds of things. And I think that sort of, that's how you're able to get sort of people to feel like this is their community.
Now, the Hillel here at the University of Illinois is one of over 400 Hillels around the world at the universities. This was the very first one.
That's great.
I remember. How many are there in Illinois and Indiana where this program is heard live?
So I don't know how many there are in Indiana. Actually, the Hillels in the state of Illinois are in a very unique situation because most Hillels are an independent 501c3 charitable organization, and they sign what's called an affiliation agreement with the national office in Washington, D.C., which is actually the international office. And that's it, right? Like you don't have any other bodies who conduct business for Hillel, so to speak. In the state of Illinois, we're actually very fortunate to have a relationship with the Jewish Federation of Metropolitan Chicago. who over about 35 years actually, I don't think they set out to do this in the beginning, but willy-nilly, they came to own all of the Hillels in the state of Illinois under an agency called the Hillels of Illinois, ironically. and it was actually the executive director of that organization, Paul Sager, who offered us these jobs a year ago. So the major Hillels in the state of Illinois are University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. There's also one at University of Illinois at Chicago. There's one at Northwestern. There's one at Loyola. And there's one at University of Chicago where I worked. And then there—
DePaul?
So there's also an organization called Hillels Around Chicago.
Okay.
and they service, I believe, 14 campuses like DePaul and some of the ones with smaller Jewish populations. I think they have five staff, each of which has several campuses that they serve. And then there's a Hillel in Carbondale at SIU. And then there's a number of advisors on different campuses that have part-time positions that assist with Jewish life under the Hillel umbrella through the JUF in a number of cities like Bloomington Normal and Matteson Charleston. I mean, there's depending on where you are, there is or is not as much going on. So there's a lot in Illinois, and we have we're very fortunate to have connections with them through this central office. In Indiana, there's probably four or five, but I mean, I regret my ignorance of the numbers on that side.
Sure, understandable. We're talking with Rafe Melhado, who was the interim executive director of the Hillel here at the University of Illinois for this last year, and his spouse Jessica Kavanaugh, who was the program director. Rafe is getting set to enter rabbinic school in New York. What's the name of the seminary where you're going?
It's called Yeshivat Chovavei Torah, which everyone calls YCT for short. And it, loosely translated, it means the study house of the lovers of Torah.
And how long will you be there preparing to become a rabbi?
So it's a four-year course. I had originally thought that they were going to make me do a preparatory year since it had been a number of years since I had been in a yeshiva environment. It's a very different kind of learning than Western academic learning. But they felt upon meeting me that I guess I didn't need it and I should go right into the coursework. So as far as I know, the traditional rabbinic curriculum in Orthodoxy is you spend a significant amount of time on three things, which is the observance of the Sabbath and the many ins and outs of the laws of the Sabbath, the observance of kashrut, the Jewish dietary laws, and family purity laws. That's the kind of core curriculum of an Orthodox rabbi. Seminaries that are good, like Yeshiva University, and I'll tout my own yeshiva, Yeshivat Chovavei Torah, they tend to focus also on a number of things like if you're going to be a rabbi and you plan on going to a Jewish day school, there are things like pedagogy and aspects of being a teacher that you would need to know that you should be taught, or one of the things that really makes YCT, in my mind, a very attractive option as a seminary is that they have courses in pastoral counseling. So if someone has, you know, God forbid, a member of your congregation strikes someone in their vehicle and kills them by accident, and now they're racked with guilt, and like, how do you service that person in a way that's about their human development as opposed to necessarily their Jewish development? And so there's a lot of other things that build onto the curriculum, but I would say, insofar as YCT is concerned, the main things are the ones that I mentioned. They go through in a cycle over 4 years to get through all of those.
Now, does an Orthodox seminary offer scholarships for students? Do you have to pay your own way? Is there some group that supports you while you're a student?
So,
have you made enough in your year of Hillel?
Well, many This is a wonderful aspect, actually, of the Jewish community. Many people in the Jewish community that are business people and folks that are in a position to give a lot of money have valued Jewish professionals and things that create Jewish professionals. And so various donors over time have developed a lot of different foundations and fellowships to allow not only rabbis but many other kinds of Jewish professionals, educators, cantors, academics, to succeed and gain professional degrees. So thank God the yeshiva that I'm going to has a program. I don't know exactly how they arrange it on the back end, but it provides for free tuition to the seminary and a small living stipend.
As well.
I should
but
also...
You have to find your own apartment. And
you do have
that.
To find your own apartment. And I should also thank the UJA Federation, which is the Jewish Federation in New York. I've actually gotten a small scholarship from them to eke out my stipend,
well.
Which is for 2 of the 4 years.
Okay.
And so there are various ways that you can accrue an income. You can be a Sunday school teacher on your Sundays. You can do a variety of rabbinic internships and other things that can help you make it through and eat.
Jessica, I want to ask a similar question for you as you go to NYU, but let me take a short break here. We're about halfway through our program of Keeping the Faith this afternoon. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM. And heard also at 90.9 FM, HD3, if you have one of those cool HD radios that gets such good reception. We're also heard, of course, online at will.illinois.edu/AM, live here at WILL, Keeping the Faith. If you've missed part of this program, I'd like to hear the rest of it. You can do that in about a week because it'll be archived at that same website. You can go to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith and hear this program in its entirety at your convenience. And of course, all of our other programs going back many years are now archived there as well. And if you'd like to hear this same couple, what they said a year ago, you can do that. I enjoyed listening to that again myself before this program. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, our guest will be Claudia Lenhoff and M.D. Pelmore. Claudia is the executive director of the Champaign County Health Consumers Organization, and M.D. Pelmore is a person in the neighborhood affected by the industrial pollution that's been discovered in Champaign, Illinois. They'll be talking about the healthcare consumers' response to that a particular issue. That'll be here July 31st on Keeping the Faith. On August 7th, we have a rabbi again. Here we have an almost rabbi, and we'll be talking with Rabbi Alyssa Wise from the Jewish Voice for Peace on August 7th by phone. Later in August, on the 21st, we'll be talking with Professor Richard Hult, known as Bud Hult. Some people will remember him from his Urbana High School days here before he went on to college and grad school. He's recently retired from the University of South Carolina, and he'll be talking about the development of moral reasoning in children, one of his specialties. On August 28th, our guest will be Professor Walt McMahon. Walt McMahon is Professor Emeritus from here at the University of Illinois. He'll be talking about his most recent book that has this isn't the title of the book, but what we're focusing on is, what has your education done for you? So we talk about education and its relation to communities on August 28th. And later in September, I should mention that we will be replaying on September 11th, that is a Sunday again this year, on the 10th anniversary of the attacks that were experienced in New York and Washington, D.C., we'll be replaying a program that we did in 2009 where we interviewed 3 members of families who had family members die in that terrorist attack, who formed a group with a number of others called Peaceful Tomorrows, who have worked to try to encourage the United States to respond in peaceful ways to both the causes and the results from those attacks. So we'll be replaying that very interesting program. I think, as I recall, I did listen to it last week or the week before. Seems to me of the three people we speak to, one is a Christian, one is a Jew, and one is a Muslim, all of whom had people die in that attack and are part of peaceful tomorrows. So those are some of the programs coming up ahead on Keeping the Faith. Let me give the phone numbers again if you'd like to call. And I might just remind listeners, we do have a 7-second delay on this program. So if you call, you do need to turn down your radio and listen to the program through your telephone after you call our numbers. And our engineer is talking with you by phone. Then after she talks with you, you'll hear this program, and as soon as I see the little lights flash, we'll push the button and you can be on the air. But it will be confusing to you if you have your radio up and you're also trying to talk on the phone, because we have this delay that helps us do things the right way. So the numbers again, 333-9455 if you're in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. If it's a long-distance call, even if you're listening on the internet far away, 1-800-222-9455. And we're always eager to have listeners with comments or questions. Jessica, I was going to ask you about going on to grad school now at NYU after this rather long break, mm-hmm. since you were last a student. How are you going to fit back in?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think... first off, I'm excited for the program, which I think is a good start in any academic pursuit. But this is also the kind of program where people do tend to go back after a couple of years' experience to school. So I'm hoping I don't think I'm going to be the oldest person there. And even if I am, that's okay. It'll be a new experience.
And you have kind of specialized in both Jewish studies this last year and nonprofit management.
Yeah, very much so. And because of that, they're excited to have me, and I'm excited to go. I think it'll be a good experience for me, and then also as being able to participate in the community of students as well.
And the practical question, are there scholarships?
Yes.
Good.
Actually, I was because we took this position, I had to reapply to NYU, which was a long, difficult process.
Sure. So you've had to do it twice.
Had to do it twice. I'm kind of an expert. They did change it a little bit between times, so I wasn't answering the exact same questions, at least. But the nice thing is that because I did reapply, I was in the running again for some scholarships. So I got a scholarship, actually a very nice scholarship, from the Jewish Foundation for the Education of Women, which generally does things more for sort of underprivileged immigrant women from the Soviet Union and that sort of thing. But they also have a number of fellowships that they at various schools around New York City for the development of basic female Jewish professionals.
Great.
So
we have a caller waiting on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest. Go right ahead.
Thank you. When I first heard the interview almost a year ago, I pictured, and it sounds odd, a relay race and the problem of passing a baton. You're not supposed to just hand it over. A runner is supposed to keep going hard until the next runner grabs and takes the baton. This minimizes the risk of dropping the baton and losing the race. So I wondered how it was that you picked the baton a year ago and what you've done differently to pass on the baton this year. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you for your question. I think that the baton passing when I came onto the job was a little unexpected, I think, from all sides, because I think my predecessor simply hadn't expected that he would get a job offer at that time. And so when he got the job offer, there were only 5 weeks before the academic year began. And I think the job that he took was a director of a campaign of another Jewish federation. And I think that, you know, he was feeling that the job was taking him away from seeing his daughters grow up. And fundraising was a skill that he had developed in this job. And so there were a lot of reasons why he should take the offer.
The Hillel job was keeping him.
Thank you for clarifying.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, it makes it incredible demands on your personal time, especially at night and on the weekends.
Yeah.
And he was missing his daughters growing up. And so I think there are a lot of very compelling reasons why he took the job, but it did mean that he left, 5 weeks before the beginning of an academic year. So the normal process for hiring a Hillel director is at least 6 months, but often a year of notice before a director leaves, and then that enables the HR committee on the board to conduct what's typically a nationwide search. Historically, Hillel directors have been rabbis, and in the last 20 years or so, that model is changing. So it's actually interesting that my successor, Rabbi Rogerio Kukerman, is a rabbi. So that's not normal, It's not typical these days.
Okay.
Normally there's a long search where they—
Where is he coming from?
He's coming from, he's originally from Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Oh.
And he has spent a lot of time, he actually was a businessman initially, and then decided that he was interested in pursuing the rabbinate. And it was actually while he was in rabbinical school in Boston at Hebrew College that he got an internship at Hillel at University of Florida. And it was there that he observed what Hillel was like. He's very passionate about pluralism, mm-hmm. and Hebrew College is actually it's not affiliated with any denomination. And so he loved what he saw there, and something clicked with him, and he decided he wanted to be with Hillel. So lucky him, he got the job. Choosing him I think we posted the job description in December, and I don't think the actual job offer was made and accepted until May. So it was really a six-month process in which there's probably 25 candidates or something. Just by force of circumstances, I was able to invest more in passing the torch because it wasn't a surprise that we were getting a new director,
sure.
Whereas it was a surprise on the receiving end. So when I received the baton, I think you alluded to my time at University of Chicago, Hillel. So one of the things that I had to do there was learn about how to run the business end of a Hillel that is affiliated with the Jewish Federation in
sure.
Chicago. And so a lot of those skills were transferable. And I think that's how my name got serviced. But from the time that someone thought of that idea until we accepted the job was less than a week, whereas this time around it was 6 months.
Jessica, when you were working with students this last year, do you remember any of the questions they asked you that you thought were particularly challenging, interesting, difficult? Because you were working with them regularly, mm-hmm. Every day.
Having been a Hillel student, I had a really good idea about what would they be asking. And so I think it was the questions that arose from differences in the way Hillel operates now than when it operated when I was a student. I mean, by force of different staff members, different situations, and I think most significantly the new building, that really sort of changed, that those were the questions that sort of caught me off guard. I was expecting questions about, can we do this and can we do that? And can we have more of this kind of program? And those are the kinds of things that I'm handling on a day-to-day basis. There were the questions of, like, when we're dealing with the relationship between the different denominational groups on campus, when one group is saying, well, you know, we're the reform group and we want to do this on Saturday, and can we do that because that's going to be, you know, it's not a traditional way of doing it, and, you know, can we advertise through Hillel and can we do this? And I'm, you know, and my response was, well, yes, that's, you know, you're not impeding upon somebody else. You're not saying, I want to put a six-piece live band with, you know, all this kind, you know, in the middle of the lobby. I want, you know, we want to do a social action project where we're going to meet at Hillel and go somewhere else. Uh-huh. You know, is that okay? Then that's, yes, that's entirely within the mission of Hillel and is something that we can do. And I think, you know, those were the trickiest questions, because those are the things where it's like, okay, well, you're right, there are some limits. Like, sure. they were sort of feeling out what the limits were. Yeah, and that was, those were always the questions. Or sometimes you have to sort of, okay, well, I don't know. Let me go and sort of feel out my own boundaries so that I'm not giving you wrong information. And I think the other kind of question that was maybe the hardest to deal with were the ones where I had to say no for some reason.
Sure.
You know, a student says, can we do X? Can we bring in Y group? Can we do whatever? And, you know, there's some kind of constraint that they're not thinking about. And generally, you know, we're a nonprofit, so generally that constraint is money.
Right.
You know, can I bring in some group? Well,
can we afford it?
Can we afford it? And, you know, and there are ways that we, you know, we've gotten outside funding, and we've done all kinds of, you know, worked in partnerships and those sorts of things. And we've been able to do a lot of really neat and interesting things, but not everything. And that's always a hard thing, because, you know, people in general, I think, and this is a good statement, I think, about our society as a whole, we're sort of used to getting things. So that's a sort of sometimes a surprise for people, and that there might be a limitation, and that's hard. You know, I don't, those are lessons that people learn, and that's realities that people have to face, but I don't know that that's always the nicest place to be.
And Rafe, sticking for a minute with the questions about questions, did you encounter any spiritual, theological, religious questions that stick in your memory for this last year?
Yeah, actually, I think one of the questions that most stuck with me, because I found myself saying the answer to it in so very many situations after it was asked, was a question that Rabbi Naftali Rothstein, who's the Jewish Learning on Campus or Jewish Learning Initiative on Campus educator on our staff, he asked me a question about kosher food in public space at Hillel. So what had happened, it was shortly after Halloween, and some students had gone out trick-or-treating, and they had brought to Hillel some of the extra candy that they got, among which was a large bag of Brock's candy, which, as it happens, is not strictly kosher. And they took a bowl from our paper goods, and all of our paper goods look the same. So if you see those paper goods, you know that's a Hillel bowl, right? Mm-hmm. And he put this Brock's candy in a bowl and stuck it out in a public area, you know, free.
To share.
Yeah, exactly. They were being very sweet. Yeah. And so then an Orthodox student came along and absentmindedly started eating it, and then had this horrible realization that I've eaten something that I, like, profoundly spiritually don't want to have eaten, and now I feel bad. And so the rabbi asked me, like, what do we do about that situation? You know, here you don't want to tell people don't share. Right, but you also don't want to put up a sign that says "not kosher" on something
in a Jewish center. Yeah,
you know, because then, I mean, there are a lot of people. I'd say the majority of people, the vast majority of people on our campus, don't keep strictly kosher.
Sure.
They keep a form of kashrut, but, you know, often something that's not obviously non-kosher, like Brock's candy, it's got gelatin in it. Basically, that's the only problem. So, you know, basically the answer that we ended up deciding on together as a staff, and often tough questions we would decide together as a staff, is we developed a policy that was say what it is. And the fullest thing is say what it is, not what it's not. But because you're saying what it is, you don't say not what it's not. So basically what we've tried to do is, in situations where there is food that's out that people may or may not feel the same way about eating it, A perfect example is after Passover, there's a tradition to eat lots of food that contains leavened products because for the last 8 days you haven't been able to eat leavened products. Huh. So we do a thing called Pizza Palooza, where we have, you know, a vast number of pies are consumed by several hundred people at Hillel right after Passover. Well, 95% of the pies are just from restaurants in town where you can buy pizza, none of which are kosher. Uh-huh. So instead of writing, you know, kosher and not kosher, we wrote, you know, from Papa John's or from Domino's. And then there was one table that said from Hillel, right? The people who wanted to eat kosher pizza could eat kosher pizza. They would just go to the Hillel table. But then the 95% of the people that were eating the rest of the pizza didn't have to feel bad because they were eating it next to a giant sign that says bad Jew, basically.
We're down to our last 6 or 7 minutes with our guests today. Let me reintroduce them. Rafe Melhado, who's about to begin rabbinic school, who's finished a year as executive director on an interim basis of the Hillel Foundation, and his spouse, Jessica Kavanaugh, who is program director and is about to start graduate school at NYU. As you look back on this year, I guess my question is, you had to deal with a board, you had to deal with the Jewish Federation of Chicago that's funding you, you had people both in Chicago on boards and local boards, you had students. Where did you spend your most of your time as executive director?
Boy, that's hard to say. I think that I spent the most time you know, so let me back up a little bit. We have hired an office manager, a position which was eliminated a few years ago for financial reasons, and that saved money and not on efficiency. And so when I was hired, there was an expectation that I wouldn't be doing the job of executive director the way that would normally be expected because I had to spend a lot of my time being the office manager in addition to the executive director.
Sure.
So I would say that the majority of my time was spent with supporting my staff in carrying out the mission of Hillel and performing the function of office manager. What I should have spent the majority of my time on, if I had an office manager, was creating relationships with donors in order to get the money together that we need in order to operate every year.
Sure.
About 19% of our budget has to come from direct fundraising from local people and also folks in Chicago and New York and California and Florida. Those are the main areas that we get
funds. These are also have been active here as students that
That's
you've
right.
kept track of over the years.
Or they often keep track of us.
Sure.
And alumni and parents. Lots of parents.
A lot of what I ended up doing, there are two board members, the president, Jeff Kaminsky, and another very active board member, Maury Fertig, who together, and actually at the beginning of the year until she got pregnant, Stacey Derby, the three of them really helped offload a lot of the fundraising burden from me. So it's not like I didn't do fundraising, but I wouldn't have been able to raise the money that I did without their help.
Sure.
And so we're all hoping that Rogerio, who now does have an office manager, will be able to spend more time on development.
Right. Now, let's talk about that a minute, because in campus ministries across different religious faiths, that's been a major problem over the last 50 years, maybe earlier, but I at least know the last 50. And many organizations have had to cut back, have had to share staff across Christian denominations, for example. In Catholic campus ministries, there's been struggles to support their Newman Foundations, Wesley Foundations supported by the Methodists have had to struggle. And I know about Presbyterian churches. Has there been cutbacks across the board nationally and internationally with Hillels? Have some Hillels had to close because they weren't able to find the financing necessary to continue this kind of ministry to students?
Yeah, I would say that there definitely have been some Hillels that have had to either close or severely cut back. I mean, it's inevitable that at the time where people have the greatest need to receive donations, that is the time where the population that's most likely to be donating feels that it does not have the capability to donate as much as it might have when times were better. And that's just an ongoing problem that I think it's not only Jews have to deal with. So, I mean, there's a number of ways of reshuffling things. There's a number of people in the Hillel's of Illinois system who either just retired or are preparing to retire, and it is possible that, you know, their position might not be filled again, or that two positions might be filled by one different position. I mean, there is a sense that because we have the federation system, that problems of a financial nature in the Hillel's of Illinois are treated as a Hillel's of Illinois system-wide problem. So instead of one Hillel with four or five staff struggling with life or death issues, it's, you know, five Hillels and a bunch of associated campuses and a central office with 37 staff dealing with the federation, you know, and the Hillel's of Illinois Governing Commission. You know, so often the challenge is greater because you have more things to support. But precisely because of that, you have more minds that can help figure you a way to get out of the rut. So, I mean, in terms of, you know, cancellations and so on, I mean, a lot of what we've been trying to do is to cut back on services that are non-essential. And if we're going to get rid of a position, to allow that to happen through retiring or people just leaving after a certain amount of time, as opposed to firing someone, and try to soften the blow a little bit that way.
In our last minute together today, each of you 30 seconds, what are you happiest about, proudest about the last year at Hillel? Jessica?
I think I'm really happy about being able to put together such a successful year after such a rough start. And really, one of my major goals had been to sort of reinvigorate, sort of help boost the student leadership. And I think we really were able to do that. And we have what is looking to be a really fantastic and very functional leadership board going into next year. And I think that was something that I was really hoping to be able to do, and I'm really glad that it happened. And
the new rabbi will be very grateful.
Yes.
Ed Rafe?
I would say that I've learned an incredible amount about not just Jewish nonprofit management, but just dealing with lots of different kinds of people with different goals and different responsibilities, and how to put all that together. I learned about fundraising. I learned about boards. I learned about managing and hiring professional staff. And I think the thing that makes me happy is not that I got that, but that I was able to do that in a way that helped a lot of other people too.
In the process. And it will make you a better rabbi eventually.
God willing.
I want to thank you both for being on Keeping the Faith this afternoon. Wish you best in New York, where I understand you're leaving next Tuesday for. So thanks for taking this hour out of your packing time to share with our listeners.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Claudia Lenhoff and M.D. Pelmore about industrial pollution in Champaign-Urbana and what the Champaign County Health Consumers Group is doing to respond to that. I want to remind listeners about the University YMCA that supports this supports this program. The Dump and Run sale is coming up August 20 and 21st at the Stock Pavilion. So here at the University of Illinois. So all kinds of things will be for sale at the Dump and Run August 20 and 21. That's Saturday and Sunday. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
I've been a part of WILL Book Mentor Project for the last 2 years and read to my son's classroom for the last 2 years. Normally when I walk in, they all run to me and hug me. It's a feeling that I never had in my life. And the reason I'm doing this is because I want him to grow up and do the same thing when he has his own kids. My name is Shoni Coleman. WILL is my source for opportunities to interact with my son and other children.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3.